Good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. Today is Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm recording Money and Markets a day early today. I'm going to be giving a speech tomorrow evening in Valencia, California, and so I wanted to make sure I got it done before late tomorrow night, so hence the Wednesday recording. Events, as I said, I'll be speaking in Valencia, California tomorrow night. If you're in the area, you can read more about it on the website over on the left-hand side. Admission is free for, general admission is free for Solaria Report subscribers if you're interested. I have a PowerPoint for my presentation and I'll post it after I give it. So we'll post it up by next Monday. And then I'm flying to Louisville Friday. I'm very excited for our celebration lunch in Louisville for the Dr. Joseph Farrell crowdfund. We've ordered both phase one and phase two. So we're going to be celebrating this Saturday, May 13th. Then I leave for Sydney, Australia on May 20th. I'll be in Australia until June 19th. Then I'll head to Hong Kong for a week. I used to live in Hong Kong, so I'm looking forward to being back. And then I'll be up in Bangladesh for a week, and then I'll fly back through San Francisco July 8th. We're going to try and do a lunch in the San Francisco Bay Area. We still haven't gotten that tied down, so stay tuned. We have now created a second week on the Australia May 2018, not this year, next year, May 2018 trip. We sold out the first week, so we've created a second week with Jason, Richard Dolan, and myself. I get to stay in the Outback for 2 weeks. I'm excited. If you go to the Australian Outback trip post on the left-hand side of the website, you can simply click through and it'll sign you up for the second week. I will say this, trip, if you listen to the website, I recorded a little audio with Jason Bawden-Smith about why I found this trip to be such an amazing experience. We described the trip, and if you look at who signed up for the second week and the first week, it's just an incredible group of people. Finally, we still have prayer books available, so email or call or send a self-addressed stamped envelope. I've been amazed how many people I've encouraged to use the Deer Cry, which is at the end of both the 2016 and 2017 prayer book. And what I tell them is, listen, you don't have to believe it. Just say it. It works. It's amazing. It was attributed to St. Patrick and saving his life. So check it out. Our theme tonight is all markets are the HUD loan sales. When I litigated with the federal government over about $10 billion of loan sales that my firm had served as financial advisor, I came to the belief that Goldman had been working with the U.S. intelligence agencies, maybe the Department of Justice and their contractors, who can say, but using promise software to basically engineer bids above the market on the HUD loan sales, giving them an extraordinary winning record. And I believe that now that they were bidding on behalf of the Exchange Stabilization Fund, probably with money being laundered in from Russia. So this was in the early 90s, so 94, 95, 96, 97 period. And you know, for many years, I used to try and explain to people that the Treasury, the ESF, that the New York Fed member banks was a very integrated operation. I had a lot of experience from working in government and then working as a lead financial advisor, seeing how much they were doing in terms of servicing systems and operation. It was really an integrated operation between Treasury and the New York Fed member banks. They're the depository for the U.S. government, but it was interesting. All of the different people I dealt with in the independent meeting, the financial system, couldn't understand what I was saying until I met the wonderful Rob Kirby, of course, who's back for an interview this week on the Solaria Report. But it was very interesting because for many, many years, Rob Kirby and I have been alone voice saying, trying to explain this sort of extraordinary integration and trying to explain people, no, the system isn't going to implode because these aren't positions of the banks as principals. These are positions that the bank is taking, acting as an agent for the government. If you listen to the Exchange Stabilization Fund interview that Rob and I did in March, the one we do today on interest rate swaps or Thursday night on interest rate swaps is a follow-up to that one. Well, how about this? John Crudell, a very wonderful reporter, I have a lot of respect for him. He does some of the best coverage of the financial system in the New York Post. Has an article called What's Really Going On Between Goldman Sachs and the Federal Government. And he writes, let me just read a bit. Last week, the Post's Kevin Dugan broke the fascinating story that the Justice Department's investigation into possible rigging of U.S. Treasury Department securities offerings was focusing on Goldman, which sources told Dugan had won an astonishing percentage of government bond auctions from 2007 to 2011. The truth will never come out because the Justice Department's probe of what really went on during all those bond auctions and with financial markets in general will never be allowed to proceed. And he goes on. It's very much worth reading. But what you realize is at last the trance has started to wear off, and that trance needs to wear off if we're going to start to make real progress on many geopolitical and financial issues. And it's one of the reasons I so appreciate Rob doing the Exchange Stabilization Fund interview. And then the one this week on interest rate swaps, it's very, very critical to help bring transparency to that and break this trance. Money and markets. The dollar came down when Macron won the French election. Wham! Dollar really went down. We were in the 98s. It's rallying back up towards the 100 ceiling, and that's an important point to see if it holds that $100. Well, it's now become a floor. So if it bounces back through the $100 floor, and or it's not really dollar, the 100 floor and holds. TLT, the long treasury, up at 2.1% for the year. The intermediate up 1.35%. The aggregate bond ETF up 1.25%, and junk still doing well at 3.26%. Equities have backed off a little bit. The S&P now up 7.5% for the year. Home builders flying at 12.67%. Europe doing much better. Everybody's very excited after the French election. So 15.16% on the European ETF. Germany up 14.65%. The developed markets minus North America up 12.49%. China, which has had a sort of a rough drop, is up 10.34% for the year. And the small caps up 10.81%. And emerging markets up 16.22%. They're doing much stronger. And then, of course, commodities still struggling, down 6.75%. Oil down 22.25% for the year. Gold now dropped down to up 5.88% for the year. And silver's come down a lot. It's only up 1.26% for the year. Paul Craig Roberts wrote a piece on Macron's victory in France, and I wanted to read a section from it. I wanted to start here. The week before the election, the Russian high command announced that Washington had convinced the Russian military that Washington intended a preemptive nuclear first strike against Russia. No European leader saw danger in this announcement except Le Pen. No European leader and no one in Washington has stepped forward to reassure the Russians. In the U.S., apparently only my readers even know of the Russian conclusion. Simply nothing is said in the Western media about the extraordinary risk of convincing Russia that the U.S. is preparing a first strike against Russia. Nothing in the 20th century comes close to this. Le Pen understands that military conflict with Russia means death for humanity. Why were the French voters unconcerned with what may be their impending deaths? We saw in March, I'm going to bring this now back into the United States and what's been happening in the last 3 days, Obama and the big Democratic donors went off to French Polynesia in March. And ever since they sort of did whatever they did on David Gelfand's yacht, they've come back. And there's been continual pushback, both from the Democrats and the sort of Washington establishment. So, as I've described before, Fox News and independent media is being cleared out. O'Reilly out, Ailes, of course, out much earlier. Now Bill Shine out, Hannity's been talked to. You have Lee Stranahan out at Breitbart. You have I'm getting reports of tremendous drops in revenues at most independent media outlets because Google and Facebook are cutting them out and shutting off referrals to them, shutting off ads. InfoWars has been, Alex Jones has been, had their revenues cut dramatically. Lots of others have too. Jim DeMint is the head of Heritage. He's out of Heritage. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in the Q&A. But what you're seeing is many of the different supporters who either really, and of course the noise at the Department of Justice that they're going to target and prosecute Assange. So what you're really seeing is the establishment, including the Democrats, trying to build towards a swarm. They've now subpoenaed Mike Flynn over the Russian problem. And what they've been trying to do is claim that the Russians interfered with the election, despite a Washington establishment that is leaking every 2 seconds and doing astonishing leaks, including a violation of national security law. Nobody seems able to produce a shred of evidence. So in a place that leaks like a sieve, including things that should be classified or national security, why nobody's been able to come up with a shred of evidence is quite phenomenal. But having dealt with Washington in a situation where they spent years trying to cook nothing up into something, don't for a million years bet that they wouldn't go this far out on the limb with absolutely nothing. Now, if you look at sort of everything they've cooked up on Flynn, and everything that they might cook up on Trump's business, they literally have nothing. And to spend hundreds of millions of dollars and people's time witch hunting over this is, in my opinion, at this point, is bordering on, what are they up to? They're trying to abrogate the election, first and foremost. That's what they'd love to do if they can get a big enough swarm going. If they can't get a big enough swarm going, what they'll do second best is try and impeach Trump or get him to resign and put Pence in. But if they can get enough cooked up, what they'd really like to do is abrogate the election. And they're absolutely testing out the Watergate playbook. And they're planning on doing it with no evidence yet of any Russian interference, and only what they can sort of cook up with Flynn and Trump, or Trump's business. Now, what does this mean? It means Washington has absolutely no interest in making America great again. They're not interested in really focusing and taking care of health care or tax reform or any of the other things we need to do to make America great again. What they want to do is they want to have a nuclear war with Russia, and they want to gridlock everything until, you know, they get more power and control. You've never seen a more narcissistic playbook in a million years. It's pretty extraordinary. Anyway, as you can see, the president is wildly frustrated. He has to act with consensus for many things. And when a lot of the people that he needs to build that consensus don't care or don't share his goals or don't take any governance responsibility, it becomes wildly frustrating if you're somebody who likes to get things done. And as I said, in some of these instances, I think the behavior borders on treason. I mean, the reality is Trump was elected president, not Congress, not the shadow government, not the banks, not the neocons. Now, they may not like it, but that's how it works. So the country needs a government to function and do its business. And so all of these people are paid to do the business of government. Many of them are not doing the business of government. They're using taxpayers' dollars for their own ends. And at this point, in some respects, I think they've crossed the line and are out of across the border of what's lawful. It was interesting. One of the corporate media this week published a a focus group that they did with a group of Pennsylvania Democrats, and they were, don't say the general population doesn't have plenty of intelligence to know what's important. It was remarkable to listen to them compared to what the kind of behavior we're seeing out of Washington. I would put that group up against Maxine Waters or John McCain any day of the week. The latest Shriekometer brouhaha, which is going to get us a couple days of shrieking, is that the president fired FBI Director James Comey. It probably would have made sense to do it sooner, although it's better to do it once you have your team in place. And the question is, why? I think there were multiple reasons. One being, one of Trump's good qualities is that he understands what's important. And if you look at the list of what he's trying to do, it is, in fact, really what the country needs. The country needs tax reform. The country needs infrastructure. And the country needs health care. As imperfect as Trump or any politician is, he has really stayed focused on what he thinks are the merits, particularly what will be good for the economy. And he's appalled that the D.C. politicians don't want to address the problems and don't seem to care that if those problems don't get addressed, people literally are going to starve to death. But they seem only intent on witch hunting and second guessing the president. Now, here's the best part of what happened. And I feel like we've had a breakthrough. And that was immediately after firing Comey, Trump invited the Russian foreign minister Lavrov to the White House. So Lavrov flew in, met first with Tillerson, and then went over to meet with the White House with the president. And that is his first meeting with a senior Russian official. And he then spoke to the press with Henry Kissinger by his side, which was kind of a way of thumbing his nose back at the establishment. But it was a highly appropriate act. First of all, the FBI director serves at the pleasure of the president. That's the law. The president's free to hire and fire and get anybody he wants. And that's basically how it works and how it operates. And if you want to have a line management government, that's the way it's got to be. But the second thing is we have seen Washington for months interrupt the proper communication between Russia and the United States on matters of state that need to get dealt with. And we've seen it interrupted by all these dirty politics. And I don't know what happened, but it was finally as though the president and Tillerson decided, you know, this is ridiculous. This is kindergarten. We're not going to be manipulated by all this stuff, and we're going to proceed to do the business that the president and the secretary of state should be doing, which is preventing nuclear war and building the kind of relationships we need if we're going to proceed with, you know, a global system that works. And now, of course, the Shriekometer does not like this, but the Shriekometer is trying to get the general population to turn against Trump so that they can assert, basically, they can control the presidency. And here's the question. You know, we did not elect the CIA. We did not elect the banks. We did not elect the shadow government. We did not elect the corporate media to be president. We elected Donald Trump to be president. You can like him, you can hate him, but the reality, he's the president. And the question is, do you want the Shriekometer to be able to usurp democracy or not? Because right now, Washington is battling out whether we're going to be a human democracy or simply livestock to be controlled and harvested in inhuman ways by the DC establishments and their patrons. And as messy as things are, unfortunately, in this, we have skin in the game. Now, there's another irritant going on for the deep state. It wouldn't surprise me if this is part of the play of what's happening. Russia, on May 10th, basically today, Wednesday, President Vladimir Putin approved a plan for 2017 to 2030 that will implement Russian encryption mechanisms for internal government communication and replace all foreign software and electronic devices with Russian-made ones. So the entire U.S. tech industry and software just got kicked out of Russia. And frankly, we deserve it. And, you know, sorry, NSA, that's, you know, when you're untrustworthy, people don't trust you, and they create their own. Now, in the scheme of more irritating people, here's what you get if you help the deep state disappear $6.5 trillion and give the banks $25 trillion. Obama is now getting a $3.2 million speaking fee for a speech in Milan at the Seeds and Chips Conference. A conference that focuses on technology, innovation, and climate change. So as he goes to talk about climate change in Italy, he took a private plane and used a 14-car convoy. And the changes or the commentary from people livid about, you know, the games being played over climate change is pretty insulting. A couple of other interesting tidbits. The New World Order continues to blossom, and now we have a branch of the UN just launched its first large-scale cryptocurrency test. And, of course, what are they doing? They're using an iris scan for verification. So now we have the UN launching a cryptocurrency with iris scans. It just doesn't get more transhumanist than that, but at least this week it will. Also, Blockbuster Chartology from Rambus, we just posted it. Check it out. We were going to post it with the equity overview, but then Rambus had a surprise surgery, unexpected, and was unavailable, so we delayed it. But anyway, so a good treat for May. Check it out on the website. Our hero this week is President Trump, Secretary of State Tillerson, and the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov for just acting like grown-ups. Something happened, and they got sick of the witch hunts and the silliness. They got tired of the kindergarten in Washington and decided they were going to act like grown-ups and proceed to do the business of government and what we're paying them to do. It was remarkable how much they reminded me of some of the very capable people in the Pennsylvania Democrat focus group. It's kind of like they understand what we have to do to get the business of the world done, and the voters understand what we have to do to get the business of the world done. There's a video of Tillerson and Lavrov at the State Department, and Andrea Mitchell asks them the question, and Lavrov basically shoots her down, and boy, is it deserved. Andrea Mitchell is Alan Greenspan's wife. In fact, I used to know Andrea Mitchell, it was well deserved. And if you watch it, it basically says it all. And again, I guess I'm kind of feeling like the adults have finally decided to proceed with the business of government and stop trying to tippy-toe around the shriek-o-meter. The shriek-o-meter is just going to have to, they're just going to have to fail. That's all that can be said. In Let's Go to the Movies this week, I chose a TV series which is quite remarkable. I was inspired to watch it because I had watched and recommended Borgen to you, which was a Danish TV series on the political, or it was about a prime minister and the president of Denmark. And it's just fascinating, very well done. The Eagle is about a police officer who's half Icelandic, half Danish. And his name is Hallgrim Hallgrimsson, and he is nicknamed the Eagle. And he's the lead investigator for an international crime investigation unit focused on cross-border crimes that take him to Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Russia, and Germany, all across Europe. And what's quite interesting, to me about this series is it went on for 3 years, so you have quite a few, is you see the extraordinary collaboration and interaction among the Europeans in handling this transnational crime. And then very occasionally the Americans come in and out, and you see in a remarkably well done process how the world looks at the Americans. You know, you're watching people who care about the facts and the truth and who are willing to deal with sort of the complexity of the 28 tracks that Joseph talks about. And the Americans will only deal with two tracks. They are heavy on ideology and sort of they get everything done by force, and it always makes a mess. And unfortunately, you see it both in Borgen and you see it here. And what you begin to really, what emerges is a picture of America that is destroying its own brand. It's very sad. Now, what's interesting is if you look at just what we've seen over the last 2 days from Trump, Tillerson, and Lavrov and the way they treated Andrea Mitchell, maybe there's hope. Maybe we don't have to completely destroy America's brand. So you know me, I'm always an optimist. Okay, our interview today, as I said, is with Rob Kirby. It's a follow-up on a great interview we did in March on the Exchange Stabilization Fund. And if you haven't listened to that, you might want to go back and check out that interview or the transcript, because it's great background for what we talk about. Interest rate swaps are the most significant portion of the outstanding derivative book globally. And interest rate swaps are a critical part of how the central banks and the global treasuries have engineered interest rates down. And if you look at what has been accomplished, it's one of the reasons that I believe that interest rates, so they will rise some, will never rise a lot, because in fact, if you look at the book of derivatives, they can't be allowed to. Then you are talking about nuclear war if it happens. Anyway, but Robin, I go into it in much greater detail, and it's one of those highly complex financial topics that generally is off limits for many people. And the power of what Rob has tried to do over many years is he's tried to make this information accessible and understandable. So it can really help you understand a piece of when people ask me how is the slow burn engineered, the role of the Exchange Stabilization Fund and the interest rate swap book is incredibly important to engineering the slow burn, and so I recommend it to you. Okay, Ask Catherine. Thank you again for all the great links, many, many great links. We had many people send us, first, a couple weeks ago, the former CEO of Microsoft has put together a website called USA Facts, and we've posted it several times. I've been playing with it, and I truly recommend that you take a look at it. And now we have a new website from Treasury trying to do the same thing. How about that? Zero Hedge wrote up a neat little article about it, which I posted on the website as well, so you can read that. So now we have the former CEO of Microsoft, and his is called USA Facts, and then we have one from the U.S. Treasury. We've played around with one from the U.S. Treasury. You don't get very much. It's still clearly very early in a beta test, but I intend to do everything I can to encourage both of them. I think this is where we have to go. So the more we all get to doing this, it's a journey. So I'm glad they've started, and clearly there's lots of room for improvement, but I commend them on doing, at least starting, this is what we need. Okay. Hi, Catherine. I'm a county treasurer and I recently joined Solari. Do you have a software available called Community Wizard that can detect fraud in a CAFR report? Thank you for your mission and work. Community Wizard doesn't exist anymore. It was, it existed in 1996 and 97. It was essentially stolen by the Department of Justice. It took me 6 years to get it out from the from the Department of Justice or from under court control. When I finally got it out, some of the most important pieces were missing. I tried to take what was left and donate it to a series of places in the hope that they would use it to seed an effort. I also tried to seed a couple of open source efforts. Anyway, at this point, what's left is totally legacy software. It's not even worth trying to do. It's with Wikipedia software and other kinds of software, it's much easier to do things. And now with these various efforts, I think we're headed in the right direction. So Community Wizard doesn't exist. It didn't identify fraud in a CAFR report. What it did do is by mapping out the money geographically and comparing it to housing data and different data on government foreclosures, it started to identify patterns that would indicate possible fraud. And it's interesting for any municipal officer, if anybody wants me to brief them on some ideas of what you might be able to do, you know, with the tools that are available, or if you want to build your own, I'm happy to do it. So I've asked customer service to give me your contact information. Okay, next question. I called Heritage about their having let Jim Domenico after having heard your discussion with Greg Hunter. The membership rep claimed that it was Jim and his staff, less accelerated pace, that caused Heritage to seek new leadership. I didn't have the basic counter. Knowing that Congress is slow and the Senate is the slower of the two houses, I'm still not comfortable that there isn't something here. I have more trust in you as an individual than I do most any institution. Have you articulated the reason for your perspective somewhere that I have yet to find? Okay, so I'm basing this on reading several articles about what happened at Heritage and then looking at the timing of it, relating to what was happening at Fox and in the independent media. If you look at the timing and the way it was done, after the success that Heritage had at sort of influencing and working with the administration, my guess is that this is part of an effort to pull the rug out from under Trump, and the foundation somehow wanted to distance itself from the administration or put more space between it. But this is entirely intuition. But my intuition is that there is that the foundation didn't want to expend significant political capital being associated with the Trump administration. And the question is why. So it's disappointing because to me, that's what a foundation like Heritage is supposed to do, is to do a lot of the thinking and then help a new administration programmatically. So I, for one, and again, I have to tell you, I'm not close to Heritage, so I don't know. But my guess is I find the timing to be mighty, mighty suspicious. And if you look at how it was done, just doesn't make sense. You know, the foundation, the Heritage Foundation, in my experience, always existed to serve the administration, and the closer it got and the more it was able to get its programs adopted by an administration, the more successful it was considered to be. Just like Bill O'Reilly had the number one show on cable news. So, Jim DeMint was able to position Heritage to really be in the thick of things with the Trump administration. So it seems to me you have people who have been completely successful at what they were supposed to do, and suddenly they're getting fired. How could that be? So to me, I think the story doesn't make sense. But if you do some searches on the internet, I think you'll find some pretty good coverage of it. Good morning, Catherine. I attended your wonderful luncheon in Pasadena. Awesome. You mentioned ideas for any subjects to be covered by Salieri. Here we go. In your latest quarterly wrap-up with Dr. Farrell, You mentioned Dr. Farrell agreed that this feels like a spiritual battle. I agree there's more happening than meets the eye, a whole lot more. During a lunch, I was a bit overwhelmed by people's catastrophic thinking, words and phrases that indicate to me people's fears and their collective consciousness of doom and despair. When we as spiritual beings forget who we really are, we tend to get wrapped up in this 3D experience and think this is all this there is, when in fact this is just an experience. And then you go through lots of different examples. I could go on and on. Anyway, so the suggestion is, can you do more Soleri reports that help people understand this? We've done several. So we did The Power of It. We did Spiritual Warfare with Franklin Sanders and John Rappaport. We've had Bill Tiller on to talk about the power of intention, Lynn McTaggart to talk about the field. So there's quite a lot there in this vein, but I will try and think of what else we could do. I would love to get McTaggart back to do another one on the field. Dear Catherine, since normally not we, the people who are ordering new legislation drafted, it seems to me that the purpose of legislation, generally speaking, is oftentimes to take even more from the people for the benefit of both the powerful elite and the special interest groups. What is your opinion on this? It depends, but often yes. Certainly the more laws and more regulations, the worse the general population is, but it isn't always that way. So, but I would say the more laws and regulations you create, the worse things will be. Catherine, I very much enjoyed meeting you in the event Sunday at the Rolls Boy. Incredible article. UN is testing digital money using iris scan. Wow. Yep, that's up on the website. Check it out. Hello, Catherine. Thanks so much for your enjoyable and informative lunch get-together in Pasadena. The Soleri family is very wonderful and smart. It was great to finally meet you. They go on. The Saker highly recommended you interview Gilad, I'm going to mispronounce this, Adsmon, and then goes on to suggest how I line them up. So I will look more into that. Thank you. I'm a new subscriber and I've been listening to your weekly interviews. They are very informative and super interesting. I just heard the one on Bitcoin, though it is not that high on my list of important topics. I was anxious to get further insight on it. I've heard several other interviews and commentaries on Bitcoins, and the same questions always occur to me that I never heard addressed. As far as I know, the way to purchase Bitcoins is to buy them with dollars here in the U.S. I'd like to know who my dollars go to. And what do they do with them? Depends on who you buy them from. It's just like if you go to the store and buy groceries with dollars, who knows where they go. But you certainly, if you're working with an exchange, you can certainly ask them. Why would a seller of Bitcoin, someone who must believe that Bitcoin will be more valuable than dollars, want to sell the more valuable thing for something that they believe claim is being devalued and will one day very possibly be worth nothing or next to nothing? In other words, why would someone exchange Bitcoin for dollars if they believe dollars are a fiat currency that would ultimately be worthless? They do it because they want to do something that requires dollars. So if I want to buy something that's traded in dollars and not traded in Bitcoins, I would proceed. One of the sources of Bitcoins for sale is the miners earn Bitcoins to mine, but then they need to sell some of the Bitcoins to pay their expenses. But also you see speculators who have made money and are taking some profits, or you see people who want to move out of Bitcoin into another cryptocurrency, and they may go back and forth to dollars to do it, or not. It depends. There are many reasons why people need cash to live. But by and large, they're converting it because they need dollars to do something that they can't use Bitcoin to purchase. I hope my question is clear. I'd love to hear your response. I'd also like to know what you think of Jim Willey at Golden Jackass. I haven't been reading Jim's work for quite a while. When I was sort of in cahoots with him and reading his stuff, he always disagreed with me because he always thought the financial system was going to implode, and I didn't think it was going to implode. I thought it was going to slow burn. Now, of course, at the end of last year, I said, all bets are off. Anything could happen. But for a long time, we were in an ongoing disagreement because he was so sure that things were going to implode. Anyway, one of the things I really like about Jim is he appreciates the danger of how inhuman what's going on is. And I think he's great about that. And of course, it makes him he's very angry about it, which of course is, if you hate what's going on, it can sometimes feel good. You continue. He has a lot of similar viewpoints as he has mentioned you in a positive way. He rarely mentions anyone in a positive way. Well, that's nice to know. He's a bit out there like Alex Jones, but says a lot of things that really make sense and are backed up by several other experts, e.g. Rob Kirby. Thank you so much for what you do at present. You're at the top of my list of people I pay close attention to. Thank you. Hello, just hoping Catherine might be able to ask Rod his take on Canadian real estate. I'm in my early 30s and live in an area that a purchase can be made with rent, creating a positive cash flow. I know you can't pronounce financial advice, just looking for an overall opinion on the nationwide market. Thanks for all you do, Mike. We're clearly having central bank policies bubble real estate all across the most parts of the developed world. I think we're going to continue to get currency debasement. And the question, of course, is when do you buy? Because when you get this kind of bubble, it can pop and then come back. But I think the long-term trend is inflation and currency debasement. But then the other question is, how do you buy right in your particular market? And you're right, the Canadian real estate market is, those prices just keep flying. Catherine, you and your group do a great service and give us valuable insights on what is going on. Your comparison with the state of our so-called government and the metaphor describing the actors is very much appreciated. Using the comparison, the Titanic disaster with our current economic and political situation is most apropos. A few similarities come to mind. And then the author continues to describe the one of the theories of what really happened in the sinking of the Titanic, that it was not the Titanic, but the Olympic. And I just did a book review of the book that has the foreword from Edward Griffith on that exact subject. So interestingly enough, if you do a search for book reviews, it was just in the last couple of weeks, so you'll pull it up. It may even be on the homepage. If Donald Trump is in office to sink the ship rather than to turn it, our original position is lost. Instead of continuing to work at turning the ship, we need to be finding the lifeboats and helping others of like mind find them also, and I know that Solaria is working toward that end. This involves more than economic strategy. The popsicle index come closer to measuring this, but even that falls short. People need to pay attention to their political status and be ready to stand together when the corporation comes around with their microchips. Time is short. The iceberg lies dead ahead. I agree completely. You know, man the lifeboats. What can I say? I agree completely. Hi, Catherine. Thank you for your continuing and wonderful work. Recently, we have heard that mandatory adult vaccines are to be in place by 2020, which is the same year that the 5G rollout is to be done. Do you think it's a coincidence that these two agendas line up, or is there something larger unfolding? I believe there's no coincidence whatsoever. I think they're connected, and there are aspects of what the leadership wants to do to convert to tight central control. You continue, we are not wanting to be worried about these kind of things, but these two are unsettling and set to be in place in only 2.5 years from now. Thank you again. Yes, yeah, so I think it's, I think those are both related to tight central control, and the combination is, along with some of the other technology that's happening, is very dangerous. So, anything we can do to educate and resist or avoid is to be done. I keep getting questions on gold money, so I just want to affirm again that Franklin Sanders and I withdrew our recommendation of gold money in 2015 when it changed ownership, and you can find our discussion of that back in the one of the precious metals market reports during 2015. Okay, in closing, next week, a great discussion with Junius Ricardo Stanton on Edward Bernays and the 10 big lies of the 21st century. I think it's when you hear my disgust of someone like Andrea Mitchell, it's really because when you understand the enormity of the lies, you get to a point of real disgust with sort of the shriek-o-meter that's going on in Washington right now. Orwell said that the worst form of lie was a material, or it was an omission, and that's what I believe. It's a material omission. But the 10 big lies of the 21st century, as Dr. Farrell would say, are whopper doozies. So, and it's a great discussion with Junius. I always enjoy talking with him. Very, very capable man. May 25th, protecting against EMF radiation, what 5G means to you. I'm going to be doing that live with Jason Bawden-Smith from Sydney. I asked him to do it live so that you could come on and ask questions and could hear the other questions being asked. So for those of you who participated in unpacking your financial ecosystem, we did that one live and it worked very well. And then June 1st, we'll be back with Harry Blaser and the Soleri Food Series. And I'm looking forward to that. A great interview with ally Christopher Mann, who founded the Michael Fields Biodynamic Institute in Wisconsin. So until May 18th, with Junius Ricardo Stanton, our discussion, Edward Bernays and the 10 Big Lies of the 21st Century. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.